It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people, a reproach, a debasement, a bringing down of people and nations. That's Proverbs 14:34, and with that verse, we welcome you to this edition of the Dr. Michael Brown Show, The Line of Fire. My name is Alex McFarland, very, very honored to be sitting in for my friend Dr. Brown, who is on the road today. And it is Friday. We welcome you to the program, and I'm going to also introduce you to another person with me here in the studio. But first, I want to give the toll-free number, 1-800-34-TRUTH, 1-800-34-TRUTH. And we're going to get to calls in just a moment. I've got the board is wide open. You've got a free shot here at the call board, listeners. So all these Republicans have made it, and 39 states now have a Republican governor. And some people are saying that the fact that the Republicans really had kind of a landslide in many of these, like in my home state of North Carolina, Tom Tillis, Mark Walker, you know, pro-life, pro-traditional values, pro-U.S. Constitution. A lot of these candidates made it, and some people are saying, okay, God is giving America a reprieve. You know, maybe the dark, slippery slope down into socialism and secularism has been turned a bit, you see. And maybe we can take hope that this is going to mean God isn't quite done with America. But let me ask this question, then I want you to meet somebody with me in the studio. So what do you want these Republicans to do? A lot of great people really put some skin in the game. They got elected. They're going to be heading to Washington to represent us. What do you want them to do? What do you want to see out of this group of newly elected conservative, we hope, conservative leaders? 1-800-34-TRUTH. But before we get to the phones, with me in the studio is just one of the most awesome guys that I know in ministry. His name is Jason Jimenez. He is the founder and leader of Reshift Ministries. We also do a lot of things together for the last 3 years of Truth for a New Generation, which is the conference that I do every year with North Greenville University. Jason has been just a very, very integral part of that. He's an author, wrote a great book with Norm Geisler, a very famous apologist, and he's with me in the studio today on The Line of Fire. Welcome, Reverend Jimenez.
It's good to be with you, Alex. Appreciate it very much. Kind words.
Well, yeah. Hey, tell us a little bit about what you do and just where God's got you in your vital work these days.
Well, I'm a pastor by heart. I mean, that's the calling that God has given me. I love to shepherd people, help families. And so as I do that, I do various different things, speak where God leads, and do a lot of writing and a lot of content, whether it be radio, like a platform like this, and other means, working with you. So our primary task really is to reach families with the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Well, you're very humble. Jason, I happen to know, also is just a very, very astute culture watcher, theological thinker. You're an apologist. Norm Geisler, the man that Christianity Today some years ago called the greatest living Christian apologist, he writes books and he taps you to collaborate with him.
Mm-hmm.
So come on, man, you got the chops. You just admit it.
Again, it's just one of those humbling experiences. I mean, again, very thankful and honored by that. But you know, we wouldn't be here today for a lot of people. But there's definitely one person on that would be Dr. Geisler. If it wasn't for his work and his due diligence and his passion and his love to help raise up the next generation like you and me to continue on to be light bearers and be defenders of the faith. So yeah, it's just great. And again, We're honored to be here on behalf of Dr. Michael Brown with the work he does. So
sure.
It's just an honor.
Well, and you know, let me say this, and I see callers are lighting up. Hold on, callers, we're going to get to you. 1-800-34-TRUTH. Alex McFarland, Jason Jimenez, sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown today on The Line of Fire. Don't go away. We've got a big afternoon together after this brief break.
God of light, It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here, Director of Christian Apologetics and Worldview for North Greenville University, great Christian school in South Carolina. The website of North Greenville is ngu.edu. With me in the studio, Jason Jimenez, 800-34-TRUTH. Hey, what do you want all these newly elected Republicans to do? Let's go to Washington to James, graciously on hold there. So, hey, James, are you there?
Hey, Alex, good to talk to you. Yeah.
Hey, man. Thank you for holding. Now, are you in D.C.?
Yes, I am. I live in the southeast section of town.
Yeah. What's the mood up there? Have you rubbed shoulders with some people who have some kind of thoughts about the election?
No, not since the election. But, you brought up some interesting introductory comments. One, and this is kind of my primary reason for calling, you mentioned that there are certain Republicans, I guess the majority of the Republicans are pro-life, as I am, pro-life. But I don't know of any who are actually trying to enact any laws that sort of support that position or are trying to repeal any laws that would sort of prevent, abortion. So do you know of any who are trying to put forth some sort of legislation that's in line with those kinds of beliefs?
Some of the names that I've been hearing are people that have been, demonstrably pro-life, Tom Cotton from Arkansas and Joni Ernst from Iowa.
Tim Scott.
South
Carolina.
In South Carolina. You know, I've got to tell you, I don't know specific bills or specific pieces of legislation per se, but I think, and this is just my prediction, anyone can feel free to disagree with it. I think that as the climate becomes more friendly to conservative ideas and causes, we might have some more, pro-life people become a little more vocal about that.
Yeah, yeah. And also to what you're saying is obviously, let's keep an eye on Tennessee and what the laws that they're passing right now, the new pro-life amendment. Also it's important to note that during this midterm election, it was really about being anti-Obama in so many ways. And so the Republican Party was not out there, breaking down what they stand for and why. It was really we need a new regime. So I would really kind of see in the next few months, especially in the new year after these guys come in, and they take over the Congress, that some of these laws will, no question, start coming, before the president.
Here's something really exciting.
Right, to be specifics, yeah.
Yeah. I've got something I want to share in a minute. But, James, I appreciate you calling in because I really think of all the issues out there, and the defense of marriage is an important issue, and just following the rule of law and reining in, I would say this failed presidency, and I can explain why I believe it is a failed presidency, but the issue of issues is the life issue, because our Constitution says that we have certain inalienable rights among these: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And the thing I say, and Jason, I want your feedback on this, but the amount of babies that have been killed since 1973 would equal the amount of humans Adolf Hitler killed times 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to believe God cares about that.
Well, yeah. And I think that, James, is why you bring a good point. I think really what we have to be looking at, and that there is a stir in the hearts, what we're seeing now among millennials and what we're clearly seeing when you look at, I'd hate to put it in colors, but we do in terms of politics. But when you look at the blue states and the red states, there's more red states. And what we find in those states is we find this as one of the top issues that we have. Is we need to protect life. And so we are seeing a stir among young people, young and old, that we want our legislators, the people that we vote into office, they need to overturn some of these laws, and we're not going to allow the HS, HHS, the birth control, all these different mandates to undermine people's religious freedoms as well. We got to do everything we can to protect life, because that is, like you said, Alex, is the most sacred thing, most sacred responsibility and duty that we have to, is to protect life, particularly those who don't have a voice in this matter. When you look at the, we talk about the First Amendment a lot, we talk about the Fourth Amendment, but the 10th and the 14th Amendment protects this innocent life.
Sure.
And so we need to protect it at all costs.
Hey, listen to this. This is exciting. There's the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. The Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which prohibits abortions after 5 months of pregnancy. Well, it passed the House in 2013. Mm-hmm. Senate wouldn't vote on it. But now the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has says that he's going to force a vote on that. Mm-hmm. And now that we've
got... Right, so that's real. Yeah, that's tangible, practical. Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, so that's really good. But, you know, here we're in North Carolina. We're right outside of Charlotte at Dr. Michael Brown's ministry headquarters, and I'm from North Carolina. You know, I really had to groan during the vitriolic race of Tom Tillis versus Kay Hagan, because with a couple of weeks to go on the election, these commercials begin to come out that said, you know, Tom Tillis is part of the, quote, war on women, because he's pro-life, mm-hmm. as if that's a war on women. And, you know, part of the reason that that's just so fallacious is, you know, how can you say you're defending women when, you know, at least half of the babies being aborted are females?
Right.
But here's a great quote. This is... one writer whose name I'm not seeing, but it says, the abortion-centered, quote, war on women message has just died for the Democrats. In other words, they tried to play this card that anytime you try to defend life, it's really males, misogyny, it's a war against women.
Mm.
And the fact that these candidates prevailed in spite of the liberal, you know, pro-choice mudslinging says that this war on women message is dead. I'll tell you another message that's dead, and I heard Charles Krauthammer talking about that yesterday, is the race card.
Mm-hmm.
That, but we can talk more about that. James, I really appreciate your call. It's
1-800. Yeah, okay, Alex, thanks.
Hey, thanks. God bless you, and hold the light up there in D.C., man. 800-34-TRUTH, 800-34-TRUTH. What do you want these newly elected Republicans to do? We've been, by God's grace, to a large degree, been handed the driver's seat, it seems. What do you want to see happen, listeners? This is the Line of Fire, Dr. Michael Brown show. Sitting in as guest host, Alex McFarland and Jason Jimenez. And so we'll take your calls. You got a wide open shot, people, 800-34-TRUTH. Just a little bit before we get to the calls. Folks, so much of what we're embroiled in is a battle of worldview. Jason, you know, we're talking about abortion on demand or not. But the question that sort of gives rise to that, though, is what does it mean to be a human? Are we created by God and therefore life is sacred? Or did we just evolve out of Darwin's, you know, quote, warm little pond? And that's only one of many. Don't you think that, although a lot of people may not really be aware of it, what America finds itself struggling with is really fundamentally, Jason, a battle of worldviews?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. And it's a worldview. It's not just about, I mean, the biggest issue here, obviously, is life. We need to protect life. And we also need to protect women who are being thrown into this and being used and abused, right, for an agenda purpose and money. Money, political power, persuasion, etc. But when you factor in these different worldviews, and again, our family, my wife and I, were very strong pro-lifers. You know, go to the abortion mill. She's out there weekly as a sidewalk counselor with many of her friends, trying to save life and trying to have the mother, and in many cases, the boyfriend or the father or whoever brings that woman there, to say yes to life and to let us help them. You know, choose a better path for this unborn baby, right? Not abortion, but we say adoption, right? And if they don't feel like they're equipped to take care of this unborn baby, that we will help them as much as we possibly can. But I think also, Alex, too, this is a direct attack against the family model. I mean, this is much more of an issue in many ways about the father, about the man, than it is about the woman. But we want to make it sound like this is a woman's right to choose. But let me say something. Most of the time, and speaking to a lot of sidewalk counselors who, God bless them for being so devoted and committed to being out there, when most people are not, they want to ignore it, right? They drive by, they don't want to engage it, churches aren't talking about it.
Yeah.
We could talk about that some other time, but when you stop and you think about the people who go there, right, to have an abortion.
Yeah.
Alex, here's a news flash here. Most of them know what they're doing is wrong. They know that life.
Yeah.
This is not a debate about, well, I'm an evolutionist and I just believe that there's no significance with life. They know that this is life, and they know what they're about to do is, in fact, murder. But they just think this is the best thing that they need to do for their life right now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I got to correct myself. I was giving the number wrong. The producer just tells me it's 866-34-TRUTH. I'm so sorry, 866. So if you haven't gotten through, that's why. Now, when we come back, we're going to take your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
866-34-TRUTH. I was giving the number wrong. But
that's why we were getting any calls, Alex.
But it was given to me wrong, but we got it right now. 866-34-TRUTH. We're talking about what do we want these Republicans to do now that they're headed to our nation's capital. We're going to go to Manhattan, New York, the food mecca of the nation. Nancy Holding in Manhattan. Welcome to the Line of Fire, Dr. Michael Brown's program.
Thank you very much. The reason for calling was that I fully agree with you that abortion is definitely the issue of this country, and the Republicans need to strap on and start doing what they have been promising for years to do, and that is get the proper legislation passed. And by the way, I happen to be African American, and our numbers are dwindling. And I feel like this, if you want to vote about the things that have to do with racial issues, we have to be alive to be able to do it.
God bless you. God bless you. Hey, hang on here for just a second. God bless you. Thomas Jefferson, certainly his influence in the founding of our nation is just beyond measure, wrote the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson, iconic. He said, quote, "The care of human life and happiness and not their destruction is the first and only object of good government." Primary life. Nancy, so God bless you. You're a pro-life African American living in New York. What do you, I've got to say that probably the liberal hierarchy behind closed doors wouldn't believe that, politically conservative African Americans exist or are supposed to exist. And what's your response to, the focus groups and the political wonks that would want to just paint African Americans with one political brush? What's your response to that?
They're silly. That's the best thing I can say. As far as painting us with one brush, my problem is, and I would love to be Democratic because of some of the things that they have pushed forward for my people, and they did a good thing. But this is underground destroying us. And I was around for the civil rights movement. Trust me, the whole idea was to stand up for our folks and to stand up for life in this country. And
right.
This is not happening right now. And that is what bothers me. The other stuff is secondary because I feel that we need God's blessing to cause anything positive to happen in this country. And as long as we're going against him, we're going to have these problems.
You're right. I was reading a book called How Civilizations Die by David, I'll find the name here, a fascinating book, but it's talking about the birth rate falling. 90% of the world's population now lives in countries where the fertility rate is falling, says America's Baby Bust, an article that was in the Wall Street Journal in February of 2013. But David Goldman, a sociologist in How Civilizations Die, talks about in America and the West, how many African-American families there aren't because of so many abortions that have taken
exactly.
place.
That's right.
And it's tragic. And here's something else tragic. I had a meeting not long ago, major American corporation. Everybody listening would know this corporation, but we're cultivating a relationship with this company, and they are looking at philanthropic giving that will rebuild the family. Now listen to this, Jason. This is a major, probably a Fortune 100 company that's very concerned about the breakdown of the family, especially the breakdown of the family among African Americans. Now, if you talk about this much, you know, people are going to say, well, you're being racist or something like that. Not at all. I had a meeting with this company, and they are very concerned, not necessarily because they love Jesus or the Bible, but they believe a strong economy is, you know, key for the future of their company, and a strong economy depends on marriage and the intact family, and I've got data to back that up. But here's the thing that nearly made me cry. I'm at a lunch meeting. This person said their research indicates that of African-American males that don't graduate high school, by age 30, somewhere around 90% will have been incarcerated or are dead. And one of the key factors predicting whether or not any young person, and certainly African-American teens too, graduates high school is a good, stable, affirming home life. And so I said, you got to be kidding. They said, of those that don't graduate high school by age 30, 9 out of 10 will at least have been incarcerated for a period or will be dead. Mm-hmm. And in my heart, I said, Lord Jesus, help us reestablish a culture for all people that affirms life, human thriving, family, and the chance to experience all the blessings of life and marriage and home that God intends.
Yeah.
But
I agree. Yeah.
Well, Nancy, thank you for listening, and God bless you. And let's just keep on messaging to our elected officials that life not only matters, it's the issue.
That's right. Thank you.
Bless you. We're going to go over to Alex, not far from Manhattan in New Jersey. We're going from New York to New Jersey. Alex, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Line of Fire.
This is not New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, my screen says Orange, New Jersey. Is that
Orange,
right?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the program. You got Alex and Jason here. What you got, man?
Yeah, I was saying that, you know, I believe in, you know, when it comes down to the birthing of the children.
Yeah.
Baby being born, that they have that right to be born. That they should
I
not
agree.
Be aborted.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of us came into this world because God had purpose and a plan. And so, you know, to be able to stop the babies from being born is just not the way of going.
You're right on, man. You are right on. You know, even Gandhi said, it seems clear to me as daylight that abortion would be a crime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful quote. Alex, I appreciate you calling. Listen, folks, the number is 866-34-TRUTH. What we're talking about is we believe one of the primary issues on which our elected officials should stand, they should champion the issue of life. I don't want my tax dollars being used to pay for abortions, and we know the HHS mandate, Obamacare, has much money for abortion. It says abortion care, not a lot of care there. But what do you want the newly elected Republicans to do? 866-34-TRUTH. We're going to get to your calls. We're going to hear from you. We do have a brief break right now, so stay tuned. This is The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland from North Greenville University, South Carolina. Jason Jimenez from ReshiftMinistries.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. Just a little plug for both of our websites. Jason Jimenez with me. Your website is?
ReshiftMinistries.org.
And you guys at Reshift Ministries do what?
Well, we provide content that we want the average Christian to read on faith issues, family issues, and country issues.
Wonderful. I am an evangelist, a traveling speaker. I work with North Greenville University in the Apologetics and Christian Worldview Center. The website for North Greenville, ngu.edu. Great Christian school if you've got a young person looking at going to college. Undergrad, grad programs, business, pre-law, pre-med, communication, nursing, and certainly missions and ministry as well. Also, you may reach me at my website, alexmcfarland.com. The number is 866-34-TRUTH. We've been talking about abortion because, you know, one of the things clearly that I believe voters not only want, Jason, I think they expect is, okay, we worked really hard to get all these Republicans elected, conservatives, constitutionalists, not progressives, not let's reinvent society along liberal secularist lines, but let's get America back to being America. But the life issue is paramount, isn't it?
Yeah, it is paramount, and I think it's important to let the listeners know and be aware of that. Again, when you look at this 114th Congress that's going to be coming in the new year, they did not run on marriage issues or life issues. And so we have to, as they've now been elected, we have to change that. They have a thing that Williams and Prubis, the chairman that put out their RNC, that included, you know, the publicity of this thing called the Principles for American Renewal. Mm-hmm. When you look on that, there, again, is nothing on the family, nothing about life. You know, obviously, we fight for the rights that we have as American citizens under the constitutional rights that we've been given, talking about limited government, talk about economy, different issues that are very, very important to all of us. But we have to make sure that we're focusing, Alex, as you said earlier, on the family first and not just on economical issues or educational
Sure.
issues. I mean, if you're fighting that a child has a right to be educated openly where they want and where the parents want to send their kid, well, you need to be first arguing for the right of life.
Yeah, yeah.
And the protection of that in family, in women that are involved in this, that it's a scam. I mean, you look at Planned Parenthood and you look at a lot of their methods and the strategies to get that $500 million they get annually. One of the things that they try to truncate and they put out there is, we're here to provide women services, health services, right? Educate them, help them, you know, and they don't want to talk about, you know, that they are in the business of murdering innocent life, right?
3,000 a day. Hey, hold that thought. We've got some stats and figures that are going to blow your mind. Hold tight, but I want to go back to the calls. We've got from Long Island, New York, James. James, thanks for holding. 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome to the program, James.
Yes, hi. Hi. Yeah, I'm pro-life, and, you know, as a matter of fact, I believe I saved my daughter from an abortion. But we hear often the concept of that we're born for a purpose, that God has something in store for us. Often Scripture is quoted, and we talk about the Scripture where it says God has blessings for our future. But, you know, these are hard concepts to embrace for the simple reason that, I mean, for example, recently I was watching a YouTube video. A girl was born, and she was born, and she was hideously disfigured in a house fire. And she basically has to live the rest of her life like that. Is that the purpose of her birth? I don't get any answers to these kinds of things. We don't really answer those as Christians, those kinds of mysteries. And I think we need to address those, the purpose of life and what this is all about as well.
Hold that thought, because when we get back, I want to explain at least a few thoughts, a little points to ponder about life being sacred in every context. This is the Dr. Michael Brown Show. Stay tuned. We're back after this break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Alex McFarland here sitting in for Dr. Brown with Jason Jimenez in the studio. We kind of came up on that break a little faster than I thought we would. So we're talking to James in Long Island. And James, you said something before the break that you maybe saved your daughter from an abortion.
Yes, I did save her, yes.
God bless you. That's wonderful. How old is she now?
13.
13. Does it just make you shudder to think about what your life would be like had that precious daughter not come into your world?
Absolutely. She's my whole life. Yes, I love her.
You know, there's a quote. Now, folks, listen to this quote by Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa said, "How can there be too many children? That's like saying there are too many flowers." You know, what a blessing. I've said this in hundreds of churches, and by God's grace, spoken in churches everywhere, 1,500 churches, all 50 states. But look, we have got to, in this culture, recover an ethic of life. Life, again, to be seen as sacred in every context. I know you were asking about the girl on the YouTube video that was disfigured. And James, you know, you feel free to chime in. And I know, folks, there's a lot of people holding. We're going to get to you. Don't go away. But from a Christian perspective, our point of starting is not just pragmatism, but altruism. A number of sociologists have looked at the way you view life. You can look at it pragmatically. Life is worthwhile if there's, you know, we crunch the numbers and there's a benefit, or we perceive a benefit. But altruism says we do right, not because there's a benefit, but we do right because it's right. Life is valuable because it's a gift from God. Even in the midst of pain and challenges, you know, we can learn more about the comfort of God, the comfort of others. We can glorify God, our Creator, even in the midst of seemingly insurmountable challenges.
I understand that viewpoint, and to me, I'm not the type of person where if you knew a child had a disease that they should be, you know, that should be another reason for abortion. I think what I'm trying to get at is, and I understand sometimes though it comes across as a rationalization. What I mean by that is, you know, it's very difficult to embrace a loving God. And I'm not saying I'm Christian. These are just the normal doubts that I have as a human being. This is all I'm putting forth. And it's that, you know, a person, an innocent child by all standards, is born and then terribly, you know, going through a horrible agony. And it doesn't seem, you know, I debate a lot of atheists at times. These are the kind of points that they bring up. What I'm looking for is practical, reasonable, sensible answers from Christians as to why. Now, I personally feel that we cannot explain these things. I mean, we can come up with, you know, sort of ideas of why, and we can say comfort and sort, and you know, look at the love of God, and so that we can see the glory of God in certain situations. But I think ultimately we really cannot answer these questions. And I think that I get troubled sometimes when we hear about all the time in life about the blessings that are going to be bestowed upon you. You know, it's not always the case. You know, I think Christianity is about self-sacrifice. It's not about being, prosperous in these kind of things that are put forth by certain preachers. That's my point.
Well, yeah, and I hear you. Hang on a second. Jason, you've got
James, let me. I think you're right. I think in the Christian circle, let's keep the atheists and them aside then for a moment, if we will. We as Christians obviously do believe in a God who sent his son Jesus Christ, the ultimate sacrifice, right? Abortion is not sacrifice, right? It is beyond a level of selfishness that people are doing because they don't want a child for whatever various reasons. And we have consulted and we've mourned the loss of innocent life with families who have gone through that. Now, but as a Christian, we have lower and higher ethics. The higher ethic in all of this is to what? Is to spare life, to save life. Okay? We don't know the outcome of any life. Okay? That is not up to us. Okay? And so we believe, we when we talk about the sovereignty of God, when we talk about the love of God, we are never to dismiss who God is, and we are made in his image. That is sacred. So nobody has a right to take innocent life, okay, willingly, right? Because they just don't want it. It's like a disposal. And on top of that, they think they can treat the woman however they want and just write the check and do your thing and move on. And it was just a procedure, okay? Or for somebody to say, well, that's just your view. You think that it's life, and we think that it wasn't life, and, you know, that's debatable when life happens, blah, 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 blah. The bottom line is the people that that we're talking about, when in the babies that have been born because they were spared, like your daughter, now you stop and you think, you now have known your daughter by the grace of God for 13 years, and we pray for many more years to come, okay? I'm a father of four. Now, could you imagine if something happened to your daughter and she, you know, Lord, you know, we pray this doesn't happen, but just that she falls sick and something happens and she suffers with let's say terminally ill cancer and she passes away within 6 months. Now, do you regret the fact that she was born, that she was spared from abortion? Of course not, right? But you didn't know that was going to occur, but God did, right? And you find comfort in that same God that she's made in that image. And I think the issue here is that we have to look at the higher good. The higher good is protecting life at all costs. It is not up to us. Now, just because there's human trafficking, there's recently, my wife was telling me about a three-year-old who was beaten to death by his mother and, I guess, a live-in boyfriend with another woman. And they found this baby, and it just devastated the law enforcement and the judges involved. And you hear these things, and yes, you do. You think, what is happening to us? Why is this happening? Why are people so desensitized? But nevertheless, we don't give up. So I think the issue with the Christians is we fight for the higher good. And whatever happens afterwards, we don't know, but that does not determine any action that we need to take prior to, because we don't know the future.
And let me interject this, and we've got to move on. For the atheist who says, well, the disfigured person, life is not valuable, that's bad. Look, if there's no God in the equation, there's no good or bad, there's just stuff. I mean, you know, the fact that there's a God, you know, we can say, Mother Teresa feeding the orphans, that was good. Saddam Hussein killing people, that's bad. What we're saying is this action, the good, conforms more closely to some ultimate standard of virtue and righteousness.
And if the Christians don't stand up for life, then who will? I mean,
exactly.
That's the bottom line. And the other thing is, I would say this, James, is we have to remember that it is God does bless those people who do righteously, the people who put his laws above their own, and they will be blessed for that. So people who spare life, God will spare it, and the people who take life, the judgment will come upon them. So that's
very
a great
true.
Distinction
thank
we need
you very
to make,
much.
Too.
Hey, James, thanks for holding. And let's go to Gene in Maryland. Number is 866-34-TRUTH, the Dr. Michael Brown Show. Gene, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Glad to have you on.
Something. I didn't understand. Say again.
I said glad to have you on. Continue.
Thank you. There is something that disturbs me. Quite a bit. I'm close to 70 years old, and I was born here in this country, in South Carolina. I lived during segregation, Jim Crow law days, and the rioting, night ridings, and terrorism done freely and without punishment of the Ku Klux Klan and other haters of people of African descent. And I've lost a lot of my family. Because of the things that happened there in South Carolina. My mother was recently died, and she died with a very disturbed mind because of the things our family suffered there. My father, I lost my brothers, my father, all to that cause down there. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
The thing that disturbs me is on the Dr. Michael Brown program, I hear again and again the issues of abortion and homosexuality raised repeatedly. But you know what? And I'm a born again Christian, and I'm against abortion. I'm against any kind of murder. I'm against homosexuality. I'm for the homosexual as far as that person receiving the gospel, receiving deliverance, growing in Christ and overcoming. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that there are other issues equally important. What about the poor, the needy, the afflicted, the people who have been marginalized because of racism that still exists in this society, people who are having to work 2-3 jobs in order to afford this high rent that, and mortgages that have come about during the days of Reagan, of President Ronald Reagan, the father, President Bush, and then his son, President Bush. What I have seen over these 70 years is that whenever the Republicans are ruling, big business fares well. The little people...
Gene, hold that thought. We're up on a hard break, Gene. You're touching my heart, sister. Hang on. This is the Line of Fire. We've got a little intermission here, but we're coming right back, and we'll get back to your calls as well. Don't go away.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're back. Alex McFarland here with Jason Jimenez. I've got to say, each of us have written books on these topics, brand new books out. Jason is the author of The Raging War of Ideas, How to Take Back Our Faith, Family, and Country, Raging War of Ideas, and he deals with these. And I've got a very similar book out called 10 Issues That Divide Christians, mm-hmm. published by Baker Books. They're on Amazon, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. In each of our books, we talk about abortion, we talk about morals, we talk about immigration and the environment and welfare and things like that. Gene, I want to, before we get to the other callers, I just want to say I appreciate your heart, sister. And you're right. You're right on the money. These moral issues are important. They are. And life is the primary issue because all these others really don't matter if someone's not existing. But poverty, racism, truly becoming that nation where all men are created equal. I just want to say God bless you and thank you for reminding us of some of these important things.
I want to say to her is, you know, there is nothing more pressing, though, and more important than abortion, because this is the taking of innocent life that starts there. But the same love and fervor to protect innocent life is also the same love as a Christian that we are to have for the life that does exist, and those particularly in poverty. And we know that 1 John 3:17-18, where John says, "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth." And I think that that's what you're saying, and we really appreciate that. And we want to encourage people that we are to, as much as possible, be generous, because the Bible says in Proverbs 14:31, "Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but mm-hmm. he who is generous to the needy honors God." So yes, there's a lot of honor that we can show by caring for the needs of those who are in need.
Gene, thank you for listening. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Woodbridge, Virginia, to Michael. Michael, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I don't agree with my sister that called the previous caller. I think
this administration
is causing a lot. I mean, abortions in the black community are probably, 2 or 3 times as they are in the larger
actually,
community?
Actually, an African-American woman is 5 times more likely to have had an abortion than a Caucasian American female.
And I want to say...
This administration is putting money towards that. They're allowing butchers like the guy in Philadelphia, I can't think his name, that was sentenced.
Yeah, I know.
It's just let them go along like nothing's happening.
Well, you know, the first thing President Obama did after his inauguration in January of 2009, there's a law, the Hyde Amendment, that says federal money won't be used for abortions, and he appropriated federal money for abortions on military bases, which a lot of people called out. That was the very, very, very first thing that he did. And so, you know, I'm staring at a computer full of statistics about birth rates, about illegitimacy rates, and let me give you a quote here that just says it all, that the restoration of the family is so important. The recent history of American religion illuminates what amounts to a sociological law. The fortunes of America and religion rise or fall with the fortunes of the intact married family. That's Bradford Wilcox and Mary Everstadt. And so one of the great predictors, if a child will or will not graduate from high school, if a child will or will not engage in at-risk behavior, drug use, gang involvement, premarital sex, unplanned pregnancies, abortions, folks, the answer to this, as much as we need the church and the gospel, and we do, but it's the family. It's to grow up in a home with mom and dad, to be taught values, to live in a stable home life of love and accountability. It's in the home we learn about accountability, but it's also that we learn morality in the home. That's what Jason champions.
Yeah, Michael, let me say something to you real quickly, because you're dead on it. And did you say you're African American?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Okay. So you and others in your community need to be speaking more about this. There's actually a site called blackgenocide.org. And on there, Pastor Clennard Childress says the worst or the most dangerous place for an African American is in the womb. Now, when you look at since 1973, what plagues the black community, when you look at AIDS, violent crimes, accidents, cancer, heart disease, you're amounting to less than 4 million deaths. But when you put abortion into context, we're talking 13 million. Now, I, for one, know from personal experience, when I go down to the abortion mill and have conversations with a lot of people who are on sidewalk counseling there with pro-life initiatives and ministries, my wife being one of them, I've seen with my own eyes the bulk of the people that are going to these abortion mills are African-American.
Right.
Very sad.
And then you also are more likely to be killed by another black person than somebody else of another race.
You know, Bill Cosby was vilified a few years ago when he was talking about, the father problem in the African-American community. And so what we're saying is the family is the answer. Michael, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling in.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
It's good to have, at least to have the mother, because without my mother, she was the rock. If you got at least one, it's good to have both, but if you have the mother and she's into keeping the family together, that's better than nothing. But
that's right.
We have to man up as all men, not just black, all of them who are taking on that.
We have to drill it into our kids. You know, they estimate right now of American teens, and I hope the stat would be different for teens from Christian homes, but they say that maybe 30% of young adults are virgins when they get married. Now, in the next hour, if you can hang on, we're going to have one of the world experts on teen sexuality, Dr. Meg Meeker, will be with us in the second hour. But in a culture where, you know, more than 2 out of 3 young people lose their virginity in their teens, way before marriage, we've got to, you know, really teach our kids an ethic of virtue and self-control. And God bless you. We're going to go to East Meadow. John, holding a good long time. John, thanks for being on. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I have a question, too. If I'm very anti-abortion, if there was a situation where the woman and the baby the baby had no chance to make it, but if there was an abortion and the woman can live in that context to save the mother, would that be wrong?
Well, it's been well documented that the cases of the life of the mother account for less than 2% of all abortions. You know, obviously, the medical issues there do mitigate the circumstances. But hey, let me pick up on that when we come back. We're on a hard break. I've got to go. The Line of Fire, Dr. Michael Brown.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're back. We've got to hurry on. You know, the Association of Pro-Life Physicians, that's a group that is pro-life medical professionals, say that abortion is really never necessary to save the life of the mother. There are, you know, ectopic pregnancies that require the removal of a fallopian tube, and in a case like that, the pregnancy will not last. The unborn child will be removed along with the fallopian tube, but this is, you know, these are rare, and really, it says abortion is not ever necessary to save the life of a mother. And there's a lot of discussion on that. We've got to move on. Let's go to Peter in Boston for, okay, we lost Peter. All right. So we're just about out of time on this hour. So what I want to do is give some facts that are worth repeating here. We've been talking about values. We've been talking about what we want these new leaders to do. Getting back to values, and Jason, you and I have talked a lot about men, you know, manning up and helping to build these homes that not only will fulfill what the Bible says about building a marriage and family, but really contribute to the salvation of the nation. So let's go to church attendance, folks. Now, again, the so much hangs on the father. Robbie Lowe, The Truth About Men in Church, this was Touchstone Magazine, 2013. Men and fathers, now listen to this, quote, "If a father does not go to church, no matter how faithful his wife's devotions, only one child in 50 will become a regular worshiper. If a father does go regularly, regardless of the practice of the mother, between two-thirds and three-quarters of their children will become churchgoers."
Mm-hmm.
All right, so God bless the moms, and the previous caller just alluded to that. Absolutely, thank the Lord for godly women. But if the dad is not also in the picture and also affirming and validating, you know, these are our values, this is what we do, we worship God, we're stewards. Look, thank the Lord for a godly mom. One child in 50 will stay with church and God after high school. But if the dad models it, lives it, and we've got, you know, what we hear, traditional family, two-thirds to three-quarters of the kids will, quote, stay with the stuff after graduating high school.
Yeah, and again, Alex, when you look at the bare truth of that in Scripture, you know, the fathers are not to provoke their children to wrath, but train them up in the ways of the Lord. That is a mandate that God himself has given and instructed men to have, to be those instructors, those disciplinary people in the family, and to lead by loving his wife. In 1 Peter 3:7, it tells us that husbands are to love their wives, or they're to dwell with them in understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel, being heirs together of the grace of life, that their prayers may not be hindered. So it's very significant, just in those two passages alone, that the role of a father, a husband in the family, it, you know, there's nothing can compare to that. It's such a magnificent model that God has put in place. And so if you remove that, a lot of these things begin to open up. And, you know, through the years as a pastor, ministered to a lot of single moms and just incredible women who've done great, amazing things. But you know what? It's so much easier when you have a husband who loves you and a father who's there to discipline and instruct and love the children.
Exactly. You know, at the top of the hour, somebody asked about what the GOP platform was on this. I'm on a website now, gop.com/principlesforamericanrenewal. Very thrilled to see in this vision, the Principles for American Renewal as set forth by the GOP, values, family, life, religious liberty, and hard work. Also, it says the best anti-poverty program, strong family, and a good job. Okay, hang tight, folks. When we come back, one of the great leaders of our time, Dr. Meg Meeker. You'll meet her in just a moment. Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the program. Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. Very, very honored to do that. In the studio with me, my colleague, Jason Jimenez. Again, I do want to mention that we each have books out on all of these moral and social issues that we've been discussing for the last hour. Jason's book is The Raging War of Ideas. And then my book that just came out earlier this year, 10 Issues That Divide Christians. And both of those are available on Amazon. Mine's published by Baker. We talk about immigration, the environment, abortion, homosexuality. What did the founders intend the role of government to be, and religion, the relation of religion and government? But we're going to change gears, and I'm so excited right now. Dr. Meg Meeker is somebody that I was studying her words and research years ago before I was on the road as an apologist when I was still a youth pastor, which was 19 years ago. I knew of Dr. Meg Meeker and her great courageous work about sexual abstinence among teens. And we wanted to have her on, and she's a physician. She's an author. Many of you hear her daily on Family Talk, Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, where Dr. Meeker is a regular voice on that vital program. But thank you so much for holding, and welcome to The Line of Fire, Dr. Meeker.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Well, where are you today, and in what do you involve yourself this afternoon?
I'm in northern Michigan, where I live, in Traverse City, Michigan, and I do a lot of work at home, so I've been writing and dog-sitting for my daughter, who has a puppy, and just catching up. I've been out of town. I was in Los Angeles for 5 days, so I'm doing quick catch-up here, and I'm sure you know what that's like.
Well, your bio is just amazing. Dr. Meeker has been on the Today Show, CNN, Dateline with Katie Couric, O'Reilly, Oprah and Friends, 60 Minutes, Fox and Friends. It goes on and on. A fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics, as well as the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute. How did you, a medical professional, a doctor, get involved really as a social and moral crusader?
Great question. Many years ago, when our daughters were teenagers, young teenagers, they're now 30, 28, and 26, and our son's 22, and I was raising them, I was very upset about the marketing of sex to my children, you know, particularly through clothing, through advertising of many things, from soap to shampoo to food. And I thought, this doesn't sit well with me as a Christian mom. I also began to see teenagers in my private practice here in a small town in northern Michigan, and I began to see younger teenagers having sexual activity early, and I began to see more infections than I'd seen. Now, I moved to Traverse City after having worked for 6 years in the inner city in teen and tot clinics. So I was mm-hmm. used to seeing a lot of problems, teen pregnancy, teen sexual transactions. But when I moved to the suburbs and I began to see it in my kids' friends and my friends' kids in a small town, this is not okay. And I believed that, you know, what I was seeing in my own practice was at complete odds with what I was seeing in the evenings when I would take my kids shopping for jeans. I thought, there's a huge disconnect why doesn't the country know about these problems with teenagers? So I did some research, and the first thing I did is land on the CDC's website, which said tracking the hidden epidemic among America's teens. And I thought, wait a minute, why is it hidden? Isn't that the CDC's job to make this public? So I began lecturing. I wrote a book on it, and the day my book came out, I was sitting across from Bill O'Reilly, and that launched me into the national spotlight for championing abstinence education from a medical standpoint. Because the biggest ugly secret in America, Alex, is that there's an epidemic of infections amongst our teens, which is disproportionately concentrated among teenagers rather than adults. And I felt somebody needed to speak up and say something about it. So that's how I got into speaking and writing.
Well, and, you know, I, as a speaker, have used your research. And I just want to say, and I know I speak for tens of thousands of parents, ministers, youth pastors, and concerned Americans, we just want to say thank you for... I'm sure it's not always been convenient or, you know, in the on the to-do list, but thanks for getting out of your comfort zone. And I want to get some of that research. But it is tragic, isn't it, that on so many levels, not only the physiological repercussions of disease,
yes,
and then there are unplanned pregnancies. And I think about the future of so many bright young people that the trajectory of their life gets changed because of sexual involvement and the loss of innocence. And then you go into marriage, and I know as a pastor, counseling couples with so much baggage, psychological and emotional and spiritual baggage because of the sexual histories of their spouses. The hypersexualization of America has had so many negative repercussions, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, we fought hard. My generation fought hard to establish sexual freedom. It's almost an American right. And unfortunately, as many people were fighting for this, there were a lot of companies and marketing and advertising professionals out there who capitalized on this. Not marketing sex to adults, per se, but to children and to younger and younger children. And we're literally staying at a time where we are aggressively training our young people as young as, well, I believe the training starts at around age 8. If you look at clothing changes and style changes in young people, to be sexually active, to be sexually verbally mature, if you will, sexually. You know, the language young people use, fifth, sixth graders. And it's so devastating because the emotional and psychological toll is enormous on these kids. And it's interesting, we have come to teach and accept and believe that it's fine for children, men and young girls and young boys in their teens and their early 20s, be as sexually active with as many partners as they want because they need to explore this kind of a thing. And I say, if it really were that psychologically neutral, why would it be then that infidelity is so painful for so many people in marriage?
Right.
It doesn't add up. It just doesn't add up. It does take a huge toll on couples, and even married couples who had sexual experiences before they were married, those experiences continue to haunt spouses of married couples. And I just wish that we could, even from a secular standpoint, we could at least admit that sexual freedom leads people to nowhere good, and the diseases are horrific.
Mm-hmm. Well said, well said. Now, you've got a book out. What is it? I want to continue the interview, but what is your most recent book, Dr. Meeker?
My most recent book, number 6, is Strong Mothers, Strong Sons. And I wrote that to help mothers, particularly single moms or, you know, mothers who are bearing the brunt of the child rearing, to understand what their boys need and why they raise their boys very differently from raising girls. This is totally politically incorrect because we're in a gender-neutral society, but it isn't doesn't work and it isn't real. But there are many things that mothers need to do to help their boys grow out of adolescence and to become strong, independent men, because our culture is not fostering that. We're fostering a sense that boys can stay in perpetual adolescence, and it's having taking a bad toll in our country. So Strong Mothers, Strong Sons is my latest book.
Oh, that and available Amazon, local bookstores,
everywhere.
Yes.
Yep. Amazon, local bookstores. It's quite popular, so people can find it pretty easily.
I wrote an article on the phenomenon of adult adolescence. Kids, like you said, that they grow up, but they don't really launch. You know, what for parents, what contributes to a young man or young woman launching, really? And by the way, I'm sure you know, adolescence, the teenage years, is really a relatively recent phenomenon, isn't it?
It is. This whole notion that during adolescence, kids are supposed to become obnoxious, rude, distant, isolated, snarly, mean, is really an American cultural phenomenon. You don't see it in other cultures. A man by the name of Armand Nicolai, one of the most brilliant men I've ever met, who taught psychiatry at Harvard for many years, and he's retired now, he's a C.S. Lewis scholar. He told
Hold that thought, Dr. Meeker, forgive me, I want to hear that. We've got a break coming on top of us here. The Dr. Michael Brown Show, The Line of Fire. Stay tuned. We're on the phone with Dr. Meg Meeker, America's expert on parenting teens and children's health.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, what I'm hoping is next year when we do Truth for a New Generation again, we have Dr. Meg Meeker as one of our keynote speakers. But that's a secret, so don't tell anybody, Jason. But
okay.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. And we've got on the phone Dr. Meg Meeker. You know, maybe somebody wants to ask a question. Rare opportunity, folks, to pick her brain. And the number is 866-34-TRUTH. Before the break that just rolled over the top of us, Dr. Meeker, you had a quote that you were going to share with us.
Yes. So Dr. Armand Nicolai, who was a psychiatrist for many years at Harvard, we were talking about adolescence and this phenomenon of the adolescent teen as being portrayed as this snarly, mean, isolated person. And he and I were talking about the fact that it really is an American cultural phenomenon, and he believes very strongly that it is. Interestingly, he also believes, and this is right in the Harvard Guide to Psychiatry, I just feel the man is brilliant, he said that when it comes to the development of a sexuality of our teenagers, it isn't completely developed. It's a very complicated process. It's not completely developed till a teen is in his late teens, early 20s. That means that if you have a 10 or a 12 or a 14-year-old child, particularly me, who comes into my office and announces he or she is gay, I say, well, okay, but wait a minute, you're not done yet. But our culture is sort of rubber stamping kids and saying, okay, you're in, you're out, you're gay, you're straight, you're bi. So adolescence is a time when kids are going through so many transitions, and I really feel that our culture grabs hold of them and pushes them in one way or another, and then never let them out. And we've got to get past that.
Dr. Meeker, this is Jason Menez. We're glad to have you on the show today. My question to you then is, when you think of the public school education and you think of the sex ed programs that they put, you know, inundated all throughout the states here in our country, what are some things that parents, pastors, legislators, as we've been talking, obviously, with the midterm elections that just occurred on Tuesday, what are things that we could be doing to, in some ways, overturn some of the things that are being blatantly taught to even kids in elementary? That is, 10, 20 years ago was not even remotely acceptable, but today somehow we're even teaching kids in elementary that it's okay to experiment with the same sex.
Oh, I will tell you, it just makes your hair stand on end. Great question. First of all, parents need to know what is in the curriculum that the kids are being taught. And they need to review it. They need to talk to the teachers. I know that parents don't want to do it because parents, particularly Christian parents, don't want to talk to their kids about something that they feel is so very private. But we've got to get over that because our kids are living in a world where they're inundated with sexual messages everywhere, and we've got to join the conversation. So parents need to understand what's in there. Many of the teachers who are teaching sex ed in the public schools are not up to speed on the medical data, and it isn't necessarily their fault. They're teaching what they're taught. If you want to get a curriculum into a public school, it has to go through several years' worth of review. That means it's outdated already. Secondly, there's a built-in bias, and that comes from the medical community, and it comes from our culture, and that bias is you parents and teachers will be talking to teenagers who are going to be sexually active. So your job is to do damage control. And that is the worst premise that you can start any teaching off on. And when I used to do it because I worked in a teen and tot clinic and I was, a product of a great medical school, but that's what they taught us. But that will never help you be successful with your kids. So parents need to sit down and talk with their kids and say, listen, and I'm writing something called The Talk that I'm going to put on my website. I fully expect you, son or daughter, to not be engaged in sexual activity during your teen years. And here's why. Emotionally, it's going to take a huge toll on you. Physically, you open yourself up to one of over 30 sexually transmitted infections that we didn't have 40 years ago or 30 years ago. Third, there is no such thing as safe sex, like many of your teachers will teach you. Fourth, you know that when you go to the doctor, son or daughter, you are offered the Gardasil shot. The Gardasil shot is to prevent a sexually transmitted infection that you, son or daughter, can avoid if you are not sexually active. So you just talk about facts with your kids, not to completely scare them, but to sober them, to say, we're at a point where sexual activity is so dangerous for you right now that even your doctor wants to immunize you. Hepatitis B and Gardasil are for sexually transmitted infections. And so we really have those conversations. But we also say to them, my job as your parent and your advocate is to link arms with you and to help you navigate a culture that doesn't like you very much. And that's why they're selling you all this garbage. So I'm going to hang in there with you, and I'm going to help you walk through that. That's what I did with my kids, and they would cringe, but on national radio I'll say it worked because our kids get that we're their ally, the parent. And once they realize we're not looking at them as this nasty, monstrous kid who's going to be out of control that we have to rap on the head every once in a while, but we look to them and talk to them as a person who is a thinking, feeling, intellectual person who can be in charge of their behaviors, that empowers them, and they're off and running, and they do listen to us.
Awesome. We've got a caller in Texas that I think we can patch in, Melanie. Melanie, are you on with us?
Yes.
Thank you for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire with our guest, Dr. Meg Meeker.
Thank you. My question is, what is her advice, Meg, or when to let your child have a girlfriend or a boyfriend? I have a daughter who's 14, and of course they're all wanting to have girlfriends and boyfriends. It seems to mainly be a title for a lot of them, but it's more for others. I wanted to hear her thoughts on that.
Well, that's a good question. I never advocate dating for kids in high school, ever. And here's why. I have seen so much emotional drama and hurt and pain. And I tell my patients, rarely does anything positive come from high school romance. And here's why, because when they go down that path, 14 is way too young. I don't advocate dating at all, and really until college. And then what I told my own kids is, look, don't date someone who isn't marriage material. Why waste your heart? Why waste the temptation? You know, our job as parents is to keep our children from temptation. Lead them not to temptation. So when we say it's okay for a 14-year-old girl to date, I'll tell you why she wants to date. Because it'll make her look bigger in her friend's eyes. And that's never a position you want your daughter to feel she needs to be in.
Hold that thought. We've got a break. Dr. Meg Meeker on today's edition of The Line of Fire. Melanie in Texas, thanks for your call. Stay tuned, everybody. We are back quickly right after this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Actually, Alex McFarland, sitting in for Dr. Brown. Glad to be doing that. We have on the line Dr. Meg Meeker. She is the author of Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, brand new book, and so glad to make people aware of that. You know, before the break, Dr. Meeker, and by the way, thank you for holding and thank you for taking time to be on. Initially, I wanted to really pick your brain about, you know, what might these newly elected Republicans do to rein in or, if not repeal, some of the odious parts of Obamacare, which is like nearly all of it. But I'm so thrilled to hear you talk about parents not allowing their kids to date at such a young age. Because, you know, as Josh McDowell says, Josh for 30 years has said, you know, every date is a potential mate. And yeah. And you're right. I mean, I've been a youth pastor for 7 years, a pastor and a speaker on the road, dealing with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families. And you're right. I mean, when, you know, I'll see these middle schoolers that, you know, their biology has far outpaced their intellect or their morality, and moms and dads are just making a great mistake when they dress them up like something out of, you know, Saks Fifth Avenue and send them unsupervised off on dances, proms, dates. And it's just, you know, I tell kids this, you don't even really know who you are till you're maybe 25 or 30.
And exactly, and exactly, and it's not, you know, when I say teenagers shouldn't date, I know it sounds harsh, and it sounds like I don't like dating. Quite the contrary, I think dating is great, but I don't believe that kids are ready for it during the teen years. I will tell you something. Many parents come back to me, and this is their line: "Well, Dr. Meeker, thank you, but I don't have to worry about Sarah. She's a really good girl." Mm-hmm. And I look at them and I say, those are the girls I worry about. Here's why. 40% of 14 to 17-year-old girls have sex they don't want. And the reason they cite is they don't want to hurt their boyfriend's feelings. Mm-hmm. And so nice girls don't know how to say no. You know, it's the aggressive girls they don't worry about quite so much. Girls are really out of their league, particularly if they're dating in the teen years with a boy who's older than they are. Physically, they're outmeasured. Intellectually, socially. Also, it you know, a lot of young girls look up to these older boys and want to please them, and they want to make them happy because that makes them feel good about who they are. So it's just an emotionally muddy mess. And I feel as parents, our job is to keep our kids' feet on the ground, keep them focused on the good things, and it doesn't have to do with the opposite sex. And finally, if girls really want to get to know a boy or vice versa, be their friend, because you'll get to know them much better as a friend than as a romantic partner.
That's right. That's right. Hey, we've got on hold Tommy from Charlotte. Is it Tommy? Hi,
yes.
thanks for holding. Where are you? Tell us who you are, and welcome to the conversation with Dr. Meeker.
Hey, I'm Tommy, and I live in Charlotte, and I'm a teenager, and I just got out of school, and I had no idea what the call was about. So, I mean, I guess that's cool.
Well, Dr. Meeker is talking about not dating in high school. And so anyway, I don't know how much of the conversation you've heard. On the screen, it says a teenager calling about why not to date. Did you have a thought on that? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah, I was curious. Would you suggest courting or dating?
Bummer.
I'll answer after the break.
Yeah, okay, hang tight, Tommy. Dr. Meeker, listeners, too, we've got a break. The Line of Fire is back after this.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Her website is Meg Meeker, M-E-E-K-E-R, MegMeekerMD.com. She's the author of Strong Mothers, Strong Sons. You hear her regularly on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Tommy, thanks for holding. Dr. Meeker, thanks for holding. Didn't see that break coming. I'm Alex McFarland filling in for Dr. Brown. So, Tommy, welcome back. And great to talk with a teenager. God's blessings to you. Talk to us about your perspective on dating.
Oh, well, I mean, I kind of go to a church where dating is looked down upon and courting is lifted up. And truthfully, I don't know how courting would fit in with this kind of culture today, but I also want to, like, respect God, and so I was curious as to what Dr. Meeker thought about, like, which you should do.
Tommy, you sound like a good guy, and I want to encourage you in one thing. You don't want to fit in with our culture, and I'll tell you why. Because really great women out there want a guy who doesn't fit in, but it's going to be hard for you. And I think that one of the reasons I encourage a young man like you to court, or rather than date, and I think sometimes it's just semantics. What I mean is get to know a girl, you know, take her out and do some things, no sexual activity, show her tremendous respect, and she will show you a lot of respect, because you want to be dating in the years to come a woman who is going to really respect you as a young man. And there are a lot of girls out there who don't. So I feel strongly that young men need to not date much, you know, well into college or even court. You know, basically, get to know them very well, but just no sexual activity, and spend some time with them and develop a friendship, really to guard your heart. Because in my experience, if you have a first love, 17, 18, 19 years old, you go out for a couple of years, and you break up, it can be much harder on the young man than on the young woman. Now, that's my experience. And it's funny, people would think it's just the opposite. But I was called to speak to an all-boys prep school outside of Boston several years ago, because many of the young men were having struggles, depression, anxiety, and many were related to past relationships. And I think that it just tears your heart a bit, because you enter this relationship kind of emotionally much more raw. So if you just wait till you're in your 20s to develop those more serious relationships, you won't regret it at all. You may regret dating at this age. So in a short answer to your question, I think is best.
And Tommy or Dr. Meeker, define for us dating versus courting. Make that distinction.
Tommy, well, the definitions ahead. I've grown up with are like dating as in like entering into like a romantic relationship kind of immediately, and then courting is more just like not really doing like dates or kissing or holding hands or anything or something like that.
I agree. That's pretty much what I know. I would encourage you to, if you like a girl or you're romantically interested in a girl, get to know her well as a friend. You know, don't take her out alone places, but get to know her really well as a friend, because she will show you who she really is down deep on a friendship level much faster than on a romantic level, even if it's courting. And you want to give your heart to somebody that you know really well before you do it. So that's why I encourage friendships. And I'll tell you, some women out there can just be wonderful, wonderful friends.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure. Hey,
Tommy, God bless you. Thank you for calling in. And, you know, if we can get his contact info, I'm going to say to the producer, I would like to send him my book, Stand Strong in College. You know, Dr. Meeker, I've interviewed a lot of young people I've interviewed a lot of people for my books. But for Stand Strong in College, interviewed about 148 college kids, young adults, 20-somethings. I've met so many young people who made decisions, sexual choices, getting heavily involved, and their schoolwork suffered, and frankly, their social development is impacted. I've met a lot of young people who said, I got involved too soon, too fast, it got married too young. I've never had somebody say they wish they had gotten involved earlier. Many, many young people, young adults have said, I wish I had waited, gotten married later. But I've never heard anyone say, gee whiz, I wish I had rushed into all this sooner. Have you?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think that one of the things that happens with high school and even college romance is that it's very isolating for the couple. And they tend to spend a lot less time with friends. They tend to spend less time studying, less time doing their other activities, you know, sports or things like that. And I think that it really can carve them away from a lot of good experiences that are important to their intellectual, social development. And I hate to see that happen, because usually those romances don't lead to marriage, and that means that that young person, college person, has foregone, you know, a couple of years of experiences that were really critical to his personal or her personal development. So I think that in many ways, you know, that's quite unhealthy about it because it's very isolating. They tend to just spend a lot of time together and cut everybody out, and that is not healthy.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Meeker, just listening to that and listening to Tommy, I'm glad he called in, having a young perspective. Obviously, there is that pressure, as he mentioned earlier, about the culture. You know, you see a lot of people just date because it's just the thing to do, you know, and of course you're getting to relationships at a young age. You got, as we're talking earlier, you have sex education is being taught, you know, as one article says, with a peer research, even up to 4 or 5 years old, Planned Parenthood's in there educating them on sex already. You know, as you said, the age 8 and 9, obviously a lot of them already seen pornographic images. They're exploiting them as consumer driven. I'm a father of 4. I have 2 daughters. My oldest daughter is 9. So yeah, you're right. My wife and I just recently in a conversation when she was out there shopping for our daughter. And she's like, again, these skimpy outfits, you know, for a girl who's in elementary, you know, it's ridiculous, you know. And then recently with Halloween, you know, we certainly don't celebrate it, but a lot of our friends, you see them posting up on Facebook, and a lot of their daughters are kind of dressed in risque kind of outfits, you know.
Yeah.
And these Tinkerbell things, you're thinking, what on earth? You know what I mean? But, oh, it's a Disney character. It's all good. It's innocent, you know. And you're thinking, man, what's going on here? But to your point, I think it's very significant that I think we need to be having these conversations again. As a student pastor for many years working in churches, I agree with you. I would tell our students and parents and leaders that we strongly it was not a matter of, like you said, discouraging them or trying to put them down, but we were not advocates for dating whatsoever, because I would say 99 times out of 100, I mean, you had these breakups. And as you said, they're emotionally scarred and they're ruined, but they're saying, well, this is just what we do. This is how we live life. No, it's not. You know,
no,
just because your friends are doing it doesn't mean you need to do it. But I found actually the biggest barrier to a lot of this are actually parents, not the teens.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of parental pride that goes into having a son or daughter date someone in high school who is a captain of a team, who is on the honor roll, or who whatever. And it's almost like our children have become showpieces. They have become showpieces. And we're really very enmeshed with our children. The other thing that we need to be wary of, and that is a lot of our banter, which we may think is innocent, for instance, you know, seeing a pretty second or third grade girl and going up to her and go, oh, you're so cute. Do you have a boyfriend? Or, oh, you're a knockout. Just wait a few years. The guys are going to be all over you. So even in the very second, third, fourth grade, we're talking about romantic relationships when it should be no part of our speech and it's not part of that child's world. So they shouldn't even be attending to it or even thinking about it. But we do that because we're conditioned to do that as parents.
Mm-hmm. And let me say this. So many times moms and dads, I mean even Christian moms and dads, believe that the highest good to pursue is that my child be, quote, happy. Yeah. Well, for the believer, and certainly there is great joy and happiness and meaning and purpose in following the Lord, the happiest you'll ever be is when you're walking with the Lord Jesus Christ. But as Christians, we are stewards. You know, we're not really owners. We really don't even own our time, our bodies, our lives. If you're a Christian, we are owned. Jesus owns us. So we've got to reestablish an ethic of Christian stewardship, that I live my life, I plan, I make my decisions with His will in mind. Stay tuned, everybody.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Burn up every trace of sin to bring the light.
What a privilege to have Dr. Meg Meeker on the Line of Fire today. Alex McFarland here, Jason Jimenez, and many of your calls. And we've talked about several issues. But, you know, Dr. Meeker, I would just like to get your opinion on the elections. We've had a lot of Republicans elected. 39 states now have Republican governors. Many of them were overtly vocal about their pro-life stances. Just give us your perspective, not only as a Christian that you are, but as a medical professional, on what you might hope to see some of these new leaders do as it relates to life, as it relates to maybe restoring an ethic of virtue in our culture.
Well, I was thrilled, as of course you were, to see, you know, the outcome of the election. And I, you know, have personally, my husband and I work in a medical practice together. We have six physicians, almost seven now and there. And we have been so negatively impacted by the Obamacare changes and the government regulations. And if the public could just see some of the things that happened to us, you know, it's literally just us up in ropes, you know, tying our tongues, tying our hands, tying everything. As far as the pro-life platform, I think I'm thrilled. I'm hopeful that many of the new Republicans who are in office will be courageous enough to speak out on their pro-life stance and not to waffle and waver, because our country is divided. You know, you either are pro-life or you're not pro-life. It's kind of hard to sort of walk the middle line there. I'm really hopeful that they will be very bold in their voting and in their speech and in teaching and talking about the pro-life message.
Sure. You know, it was said that during Obama's first term as president, 4.8 million babies were aborted during his first term, the highest ratio of any president. And so, you know, do you remember on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade when he talked about, quote, the lives saved by Roe v. Wade? I was in an airport, and I heard this over a TV screen and a speaker, and I just wanted to bang my head against the wall. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that the public doesn't think about, too, but I can say as a medical professional, the obstetrician gynecologists who are performing a lot of abortions, by and large, are not the cream of the crop. And here's why. Because they've got good OBGYNs have so much work to do anyway, and that keeps them from doing abortions, even if they believe in it. You know, and secondly, if they waffle at all, they just choose to opt out. So, you know, it's not as though many women are placing their hands in the skills of really great obstetricians to begin with. So this whole idea that, you know, that they're having done safely is really false. I personally have seen complications, horrible complications from quote-unquote failed abortions. And on the times when I've tried to get these children help, you know, 17, 14 years old, in each of the cases, I've called up the a person who did the abortion, and they refused to see the patient. And here's why. Because they didn't want to admit mistakes. Because there's a liability there, too. So it really is a mess, but I had a hard time having an OBGYN, another person, take them on because they didn't want to, for want of their words, mop up another person's mess. So these people, these women are stuck. They're up a creek because if they have a complication, the performing physician may not want to see them back. And if he does see them back, are they going to trust that person to take good care of them? No.
Right.
Because
right.
by and large, these are not the best physicians in the medical field who are performing these.
Dr. Meeker, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Time just fleets away, but before we run out of time, let me again encourage you. The name of your newest book, Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, I encourage people to get that. But quickly, tell us what's going on at Family Talk. What is your role there? And tell us, for those that may not be aware of Dr. Dobson's great yes. ministry.
Thank you. I am now co-hosting the Family Talk with radio program with Ryan Dobson and Dr. James Dobson. So we're continuing to produce really great shows on all of the issues, the family issues that are so that concern parents across America, Christian and non-Christian. And our audience is growing by leaps and bounds. And I'm really thrilled because many people think that Dr. Dobson has retired after he left Focus on the Family. He's anything retired. He's really amped up. And so Family Talk is really, we are writing, we are blogging, we are out on the radio. So we had just had a great conference. So we're alive and kicking and well, and we're having at it. So it's great to be part of such a wonderful organization.
Well, indeed. And the website is what, familytalk.org?
DrJamesDobson.org, but if anybody just Googles Family Talk or just Googles Dr. James Dobson, Family Talk comes up. So Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, and terrific website with a lot of great information.
Well, indeed. Hey, thank you so much for being on, Dr. Meeker. Listeners, keep her in prayer. Go to her website. What's your URL again, Dr. Meeker?
MegMeekerMD.com.
MegMeekerMD.com. Hey, whether it's on Dr. Brown's show or the other shows that we do, we hope to visit again with you very soon.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it's been a lot of fun, Alex, and thank you, Jason. Nice meeting you as well.
You too, Dr. Meeker. Great having you.
God bless you. Thank you, Dr. Meeker. Well, folks, this is The Line of Fire, Dr. Michael Brown. His website is askdrbrown.org. This is like where the lightning round of URLs. We're giving out so many websites. But I want to say that Dr. Brown has a really great offer. There's a copy of his book, A Stealth Agenda, which is, as you know, and I've known Dr. Brown a decade, everything he does is excellent, incredible research. A Stealth Agenda can be yours free when you purchase a copy of the DVD debate with Harry Knox. Dr. Brown is out there debating, defending the faith. A Christian Response to Homosexuality was the debate, and you've got to hurry. A stealth agenda is only available while supplies last, and it's an out-of-print resource, but it's vital. I've got it. And so for a limited time, you can get this tool to help understand the gay agenda. And so for $20, postage paid, and so you go to Ask Dr. Brown, AskDrBrown.org, and learn about that very special offer. Well, Jason, I just could spend hours talking with you, but let me give a quote here. And because, you know, we've talked about legislation, our elected officials, but, you know, it all boils down to the family. One researcher said this, that kids who feel rejected by their fathers show higher rates of behavioral problems, delinquency, depression, substance abuse. That's from the Personality and Social Psychology Review. It's all about the family, isn't it?
Right.
And thank you for being on.